Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking the 77th anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima by meeting one of the Marines who was there, 97-year-old Howard Fry of Sunnyside, Washington, originally from Ava, Missouri. He served on a 105mm howitzer crew in the 3rd Marine Division, and he has a scar on his finger that looks pretty grisly. This is from a mishap loading ammunition in one of those big guns.
So this is on your...
My finger around that rim and ram it into that there... That's what I got out of it.
So you got your finger pinched when you were shoving the shell in?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That scar looks like that finger got ripped open pretty good.
It's from right there to... It's just hanging. Right.
Where were you when that happened?
Guam. That's my medal for the country. I didn't let them know it. I didn't want no Purple Heart.
I'm just imagining, because I think... Any guy out there listening has probably hit his finger with a hammer at some point or done something or pinched his finger at a door. Or I'm just looking at your finger.
Oh, yeah.
And you just said that, so that flesh where you have the scar, that there was a cut there and the rest of that finger was just hanging off. So you're bleeding, but blood is not the issue. The pain is what I'm thinking about.
No, I didn't make any effort to me to just keep it going.
I mean, I would have screamed. If I did that to my finger, I think I would have been screaming in pain.
No, we didn't battle.
Did you bandage it up or anything?
Oh, after a while. Had to get a band-aid around it after a while.
So your time on Guam, were there some things that you went through there that you had to get used to that you'd never experienced before?
Well, you had to do something every day, just about. Uh-huh. Whatever the command and... Whatever has to be done.
Where did you guys sleep?
On the ground.
You had to dig a foxhole?
Yeah. Yeah, we had foxholes. We had to build a foxhole to keep, especially when you in artillery, you had foxhole more than the infantry did. Because it was on the move, and we was move and stop.
Did it get very wet there? Did you have rain fill up your foxhole?
Quite a bit. It rained quite a little bit.
Did you face anything at Guam where you felt like your life was in danger?
Oh, it's always in danger out there. It's always in danger.
Because of enemy artillery or bombers or what?
Mostly artillery and snipers. And you're going, and might be a plane come over and drop a bomb or something.
Did you have any contact with your family at all?
Just by letter. Mostly, I received the letters, but I couldn't return them because we was in battle and couldn't return them real quick.
And while you were on Guam, did you have to deal with losing people that you knew? Did you see guys getting killed around you?
Oh, we didn't do as bad as some of the other guys. It wasn't too bad. Artillery, you're mostly behind the front. If you get it, you'll get it in a shrapnel from ammunition coming in on you.
Is that something you dealt with?
Oh, yeah, you deal with that all the time. Uh-huh.
Was there anything on Guam that you would look back on and say, hey, that was a pretty close call?
Oh, I don't know. You know, we were in a position and we ordered to do it and you didn't get out of there.
But you didn't know what was coming next. And come February of 1945, you ended up at a place that a lot of people had never heard of before. Had you ever heard of Iwo Jima?
No, I don't think so. No, nobody ever went there. One day we had it pretty well scared, and I walked off a little ways to get more air, and I went around a rock, and way down, oh, I don't know, quite a ways, I saw one man down there, and I knew it wasn't ours. I called in ammunition here this far and got him. I just turned around and walked off. So, yeah, you get used to it. I did, anyway.
And the guys that I've talked to that were at Iwo Jima, I've heard a lot of different stories. I guess for you, with the 3rd Marine Division and being in artillery, you wouldn't have been in the first wave of guys going ashore.
No.
What did you see? or feel or smell or hear when you went ashore? Can you help us understand what that might have been like?
Nothing smelled good there.
And as you came ashore, could you see some of what had happened before you came ashore?
Yes. Mostly of floating guys or something like that were tore up and laying there and all that. You just walk over them all and go on.
You were already desensitized to that?
Oh, yeah. It's one or two men go with the ammunition. I mean, he gets on and start firing, and then some more come to back up. So you have backup. If you get shot up, then they'll come in and be another backup for you.
And is anybody shooting at you while you're coming ashore?
You didn't know it. You kept your head down and then take a run when you get in. Artillery and infantry is different. Infantry is ahead of you, trying to get a little place to other people come in. So I can't hardly tell you how it feels. It's just numb. You do what you're supposed to.
And, you know, there's a lot of stories about how they thought they could make pretty quick work of Iwo, that it wouldn't take long to secure the island. Do you remember hearing anything?
I don't know. We was hoping. That's about all I can tell you. We was just hoping.
But did you know how many tunnels they had there?
No. We didn't know that. See, we was out in the field, and some of them was back there, and they're going through them tunnels and stuff, and we're out in the field.
Was that a little disorienting, not to know where the enemy was all the time?
Well, I'm in artillery, you see. The infantry is ahead of me. They call it a firing, and we do what they want you to hit, so they can go for some more push. Most of them, the way they did is in the morning, they would make a push, but they want some artillery ahead of them, and then pull in and come in and take them.
So there's not a whole lot of margin for error with that, is there?
No, there isn't. No, you got men ahead of you, and they're all around you, and you better stay with you what they tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering if there was a feeling of responsibility with that, because if your math is a little off, you might kill your own guys.
Well, it might have been, but I don't think I felt that way. I felt like I knew that they was giving me coordinates and everything. They had people up front calling them coordinates in, and maybe one of our might get off a little bit and go over and kill one or two. You never know. You never know what you're doing up there.
What was the biggest difference between what you experienced at Guam and what you experienced at Iwo Jima?
I think it was maybe a little more hotter in Iwo Jima than it was down there in Guam.
And, you know, for most people, if you say Iwo Jima, there's one particular image that comes to mind, and maybe the most famous photograph of all time that was taken atop Mount Suribachi with the flag going up. Did you see at some point the flag flying on top of Mount Suribachi?
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah, I did. You know, now we got it. See? Something like that. Really something. It wouldn't be there 1 minute. The next minute it'd be there. And, feel a lot better.
Well, I'm sure you've seen that photo a few more times since then. And you've seen the statue and all of that. I'm just wondering what you think about when you see that photograph. What does it mean to you?
I know I wouldn't want to go back again. You have so many different feelings. Most of the dinner, you're always trying to stay alive.
When I asked you about close calls on Guam, what about on Iwo Jima? Were there some close calls?
They were bad, too. See, the main push was a lot harder than the second push. So we was on the second push, or whatever you want to call it. They had that part secured to get enough ammunition and to get the artillery in, start firing, you see. So the infantry, I say, is the best. I mean, the worst. It's all bad, but the infantry is bad because they got to go in and kill.
Well, I don't want to take too big of a leap here, but it kind of sounds like you're saying maybe being in the artillery saved your life?
You never know. I think so, probably so.
I'm just thinking about the timing of everything, and as you just said, the big push was before, you know, they created room for you guys to come ashore and do the artillery job. Were you still there on the island when they had those cemeteries there with all the white crosses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's bad. Yeah.
You've got a souvenir right under your hand here that is a knit scarf with some Japanese characters on it. What's the story behind that? Where did that come from?
On Iwo Jima, where's that? Where got it?
Was it on the body of a Japanese soldier?
Yeah. Some of that.
What was the most challenging aspect of what you did?
Now you ask me to. I had a lot of them. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed it and I didn't enjoy it. But I had to do it and I did it. So I don't know.
What was the part that you enjoyed?
Oh, I'm coming home. Yeah, yeah. You go in there and do your job, then come in and start training again to go to another guy.
What were the things that you did not enjoy?
Killing. Yeah. I hated it.
You were a very young man. In fact, your birthday's in February.
Yeah.
So when you were at Iwo Jima, you had just turned 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at dead Americans and dead Japanese?
Japanese, they were up in, at that time, they was up in Motom, underground. You could hear them digging. Trying to get out.
I'm just wondering what it's like, because, I mean, we know now how long it lasted, but at the time, you don't know. No one's telling you, hey, next week it's over.
Sometime we're going to get out of here, maybe.
So when you're in one of those foxholes at night trying to sleep, what kind of stuff do you think about?
Probably home. Probably. We got down to where we had a little time. I went for a walk from artillery. I just took off. Started to the airport. It was just a little bit away from us. I went over there and got started again. And it got pretty hot, and I said, ah, damn, I better get back. So I went about and got back and got in the foxhole again. So.
And when you say it got pretty hot, you're not talking about the temperature?
No.
So you're just off walking by yourself and there's stuff flying through the air?
Yeah, so I just went back.
You know, there's something else you have on the table here. You've got an M1 and you've got some Japanese money and this scarf that came from one of the Japanese soldiers. And then you've got a little tiny Bible over there, too.
Yeah. I carried it all the time.
What did that mean to you?
Well, I hoped it helped me.
It's not like you can read it in a foxhole at night, right?
No, you could. You couldn't read it anywhere. It's just, it's there.
Was there ever any concern about the Japanese coming into your area at night?
Oh, yes, and they did. Well, all I know is that I do what they tell me to. I was in there to try to get home.
I said that earlier, once a Marine, always a Marine. Yeah. What does that mean to you?
Good outfit. One of the best, I think.
One of the best. We can say that about Howard Fry as well. And for a little additional perspective, let's hear from Howard's daughter, Pam. Pam, growing up, did you know your dad had been in the Marines?
You know, we were so young, and it was just part of life. I mean, it was what happened. His uniform was there. It was always in the trunk. You know, we'd get it out and look at it. But he didn't talk much about it. Mostly what I knew about the war was what I learned in school. And then as we got older, you know, we'd ask questions and looked at all of his memorabilia and stuff. But, you know, I knew he'd served and I was proud of that. And I think it made him a really strong person. He still is. That's what keeps him going. He's just so determined. You know, he's a fighter all the way. So, you know, he was a good dad.
You know, Iwo Jima has been as publicized as pretty much any battle in World War II. And like we talked about with him, that image of the flag atop Mount Suribachi is so iconic. I'm sure you've read and heard and seen a lot of things about Iwo Jima over the years. Is it hard to imagine?
I cannot fathom being 18 years old and going into a war like that, especially coming from the hills of Missouri, where you're just such a young, impressionable youth, I guess, and taking off on a bus, having never been on a bus, and going clear across the country and unloading in a state that you've never been in, and then doing all the things that you do and fighting and all of that is just, I can't imagine an 18-year-old or 19-year-old doing that now. I can't.
You know, I don't want to be melodramatic or cliche or anything, but when you know how many Marines died to to take Iwo Jima and you know your dad was there, does that impact the way you see your own existence?
Oh, definitely. You know, I feel very fortunate that he survived because I wouldn't be here, my kids wouldn't be here, you know, my grandchildren wouldn't be here. I'm just glad that he took the job that he had and wasn't in the, you know, the infantry or in the Amtrak, and that, you know, he did what he did. And it's, you see the stories and you see the clips from the news, and it's just, oh, it's just crazy what they went through.
And here in Sunnyside, you directed me to a real impressive memorial that you have in downtown. It takes up an entire block, and I think you said it's going to be the biggest by weight memorial in the state?
Right, by weight, due to the size and the weight of the granite blocks. I think it's really special. It's just beautiful what they've done. And the gentleman that is leading that is a classmate of mine, and he was in the Vietnam War. He has just, I mean, it's basically his life. He lives and loves that, you know, what he does. And it's, I think a lot of people are very proud that that's in Sunnyside.
Your dad and his generation of service people, what do they represent to you?
You know, I think they made the United States what it is, what it should be. I mean, when they were over fighting, then the women and the men and the people still here were doing things they never dreamed that they would be doing, put in a position, having to go on food stamps and not being able to buy their nylons and, you know, just the different things that people had to do to survive, to give up. And when they'd already given up a whole lot and didn't have much because of the Depression. And then here they were faced with working in plants when women were typically home, you know, taking care of the kids. And there they were putting airplanes together. So, you know, it's an amazing generation, and there's not very many of them left.
And that's exactly why we do this show, to capture those stories while they're still here to tell them. It's time for our final break. But when we come back, memories from a twice-wounded Marine who passed away this week at 97. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.